another book. Some people, a very good friend of mine who's a great coach, recommended this book, so I went out and got it, or Lydia went out and bought it for me, and I read it over the weekend. It was my first opportunity to get a chance to read it. And I got information from it through other sources, too. There were like three confirmations I got from other people over the last month after I already had the book that this book had some great meaning to it. So I decided, okay, I'll jump into it now that I've gotten my multiple confirmations. And the name of the book is called Four Agreements, The Four Agreements. And this, hang on a second, I'm going to put you on mute because we're getting a lot of background noise. Okay, there we go. The name of the book is called The Four Agreements. It's written by a guy, his name is Don Miguel Ruiz, and it really is a book, it's a Toltec wisdom book called The Four Agreements. And to start off, I just want to talk about what the premise is behind the book, because that's important to understand why the book was written and what the whole book is about. Truly, the book starts off with telling you that what is our history? What are we made of? What are we developed? How do we grow as people? What inspires us? What causes us to have certain belief systems? And he refers to them as agreements that we develop in our life. And what Ruiz does as the author, he goes through all the different experiences we have in life, and he kind of, the first whole chapter is about, you know, as children, we get programmed by our parents, we come to agreements around all sorts of things. We make thousands and thousands of agreements in our life in our early stages. We make agreements as to, about ourselves. We make agreements with God, like we might take on the Ten Commandments. That's agreements we make with God. We agree with those commitments, and we take them on as agreements with ourselves. We make agreements with society. We agree to live in a certain way. We agree to respond to authority in certain ways. We make agreements with our parents. We agree to be disobedient. We agree to be obedient. We agree to do certain things. We agree not to do certain things. We make agreements with our spouse. We make agreements with our children. We make agreements about our dream of our life. We make all sorts of agreements. You know, and some of you, as I talked earlier on the phone, some of you made an agreement not to do goals in your life. Now, that's an agreement that you've made, okay? And then we look at all these agreements are what run our lives. They control our lives because they really make the decisions in our lives from a day in and day out basis, because they're commitments or agreements that we've made based on many different experiences that we've had in our lives. And many of the agreements that we've made arise out of fear, and we see that flooding this world today. If you don't believe me, turn on the 5 o'clock news, and you're going to see how many decisions and how many agreements come out of fear. We make massive agreements out of fear. And some of the agreements we have that we carry that we've made out of fear is we have a fear of not being perfect. We have a fear of being rejected. We have a fear of making a mistake. We have a fear of just being ourselves. So we spend our lives being somebody else or playing pretend on being somebody who we're not. That's a really scary proposition, but it's very true. We spend our lives failing to take action. We just stay stuck because we're fear of making a mistake. We have fear that people won't like us, so we take on, I have to aim to please. I try to make everybody happy around me. We continue to dishonor ourselves around all these agreements we have around fear because they cause us to be everything that we're not and everything that we just deny our own self, our own beingness around all these fears, these agreements around fear. When the agreements come out of love, now they have very great service to us. We have a tremendous amount of agreements we make out of love, too. But the agreements out of fear tend to override agreements out of love. And therein lies our big devastation. Why we aren't creating the greatness that we should be creating in our lives. Why we're not achieving the things we should achieve. Because the agreements out of fear override our agreements out of love. So with these thousands of agreements that we've made, we come to the conclusion, and many of us walk around this earth and we say, this is what I am. I can do some things and other things I can't do. This is my reality. And therein lies our stuckedness, is that we take it on as who we are instead of taking it on as who we've chosen to be and making a different choice around what we can look like. So we're trying to look at the opening premise here then exists that we have massive agreements or beliefs, whichever way you want to look at them, that control our life and how we live it. We tend to get stuck and say, you know, like I'm competitive, I have to be in control, I always have to be right. All these things that we have that are agreements with ourselves that we tell people, well, that's just the way I am. And it's not just the way you are, it's the choice you've made about certain things in your life, and you can choose differently. But instead of, you know, there's a lot of personal development work out there, and I, you know, as you know, because I consistently support the Clemmer work and other work that's being done out there, that we can learn that we can make different choices around things, but we have to go through awareness and all these stepping stones to get there. You know, the awareness first, then we have to break the agreements, then we have to reconstruct new agreements or new beliefs that take those places of the ones that aren't serving us to move us forward. Well, the premise around this book, this by Don Miguel Ruiz, The Four Agreements, is that there are four very powerful agreements. That if you adopt these four agreements fully and fully follow them, they will operate to overcome any of these agreements coming from fear that are causing you to deplete your own energy. So instead of going into awareness and the depth of psychoanalysis or going to massive personal development or all this kind of stuff, this is kind of a technique that he's using in this Toltec Book of Wisdom to say, if you take on these four agreements and you live these four agreements daily and you work on building them in your life as foundational cornerstones to your life, then you will overcome the agreements of fear and all the past things that you've built in your life that are holding you back. So let's look at what those four agreements are. Again, it's just a new way of looking at how do I overcome things that are standing in my way for success. And I love this kind of call before we start into goal setting, because hopefully it'll set a stage for you that you can be more open and honest about your goal setting and start looking at a clearer reality for yourself versus how we've clouded up our lives with so much stuff. The first agreement, he said, is be impeccable with your word. He calls this not only the first, but the most important of all agreements. Be impeccable with your word. And when he talks about this, sometimes we listen to that language and we might just dismiss it, but it's not something for us to dismiss. Our word is incredibly, incredibly powerful. In fact, when he started in the book, Ruiz, one of the first quotes he talked about in the chapter on the first agreement being the power of the word, he quoted the Bible, and he talked about how, you know, when God created earth, there was the Word, and the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word is God. And he kind of took that whole analysis, and he says, you know, our word is our expression of who we are. Our word expresses our entire creative being. Our word is an incredible force in our life. And this is about what comes out of that mouth. What of our words? What of our communication skills? The power we have to communicate, to think, and thereby to create the events in your life. And I know even Clemmer goes to the point of saying, to think is to create. That's the basic premise behind his book, If How-To's Were Enough, We'd All Be Skinny, Rich, and Happy. You can remember James Allen book, As a Man Thinketh, So Is He, right? And that's a biblical verse, Bible verse too. You are what you think. And this is one of my other favorite ones. These are quotes that I just came up with that kind of fit within the framework of this agreement. If you believe you can, or you believe you can't. Either way, you are right. I love to use that with people in my organization in coaching calls. They call me up and they go, I don't think I can be. And I said, well, great. You know, if you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right. Because it puts back the responsibility on them to choose their beliefs differently. There's nothing out there that makes or detracts from you except for you yourself. So if you believe you can, you can. If you believe you can't, you know what? You can't. It's what you believe inside of you that's so powerful. So we look at our word and our expressiveness of as our creative thought. Our word is so unbelievably powerful. It is the source of our inner force, our inner creative being. Our intent manifests through our word. What we dream, what we feel, really all all will be manifested through the word. So we have to keep that in mind. Our word is powerful, but it's powerful both ways. Our word can be used to create incredible things in the world. We can change the people around us. We can change the world around us. We can impact them in a positive way. We can have incredible impact on people and on the world in a very positive light. But we can also do what? We can also have a tremendously negative impact with our word. And you can just look in the 1930s and 40s. We can look at leaders around the world. And I just picked on one because it came right out of Ruiz's book. He said we can see in the 30s and 40s, the 1930s and 40s, we can see how the word of one man manipulated an entire country of very intelligent people to commit some of the most atrocious acts ever committed in the history of mankind. And we know that man is Hitler. And we watched what he did as one man manipulated. And where does his whole concept come from? All of his word came from agreements or belief systems around fear. It was his fear of the Jewish population. It was his fear of them being stronger. And the fear is what triggered this incredible concept in his word to come out and be so powerful. So we can see now how tremendously damaging agreements around fear can be, but we also see how if we're impeccable with our word, we can withstand some of those agreements that we've made around fear. But Hitler wasn't impeccable with his word. He was a man that was out to destroy. It was all lose-lose. The world was about lose-lose. He thought it was lose-win, but it was lose-lose, his whole depiction of the world. So we can see how our word can really, in that instance, his word totally, devastated an entire country. It's started an incredible devastation of a whole population of Jewish people in Germany and around in Eastern Europe. It's incredible what one person words could do in that regard and how powerful they are. When we take it on a personal basis, we can look at how our words can really be detractive and devastating to people. Like, if you say one thing to somebody, we cast spells. He talks about almost like it's spell casting, because it really is. We cast a spell on somebody. It's like a, and I don't believe in voodoo and all this kind of stuff, but it's very, you can draw the analogy that when you start telling somebody, if you tell somebody they're stupid or they're ugly, you look at what you do to their whole persona. You can cast a spell on them. Now all of a sudden they have this belief system. Oh my gosh, she believes I'm ugly or I'm stupid. And look what happens to them. They go into this doldrum, and they might be lost in that belief, and either defending it or believing it for the rest of their lives. Or they may be lost in it for a month, or they may be lost in it for 6 years, or whatever it takes for them to overcome one little comment out of your mouth that happens to might be just your lousy opinion, but oh man, you had to just serve that up there and just cause that devastation in people's lives. And as a little child, sometimes we get into that petty stuff because that's how we play games. We don't know any better and we just throw these words out. And that's where parenting becomes so important for us as parents, to step in and make our children realize the critical importance of the words that they use out of their mouth and how damaging and destructive that terminology can be. So, and he talks about gossip as one of the worst. He compared gossip to a computer virus. He says that gossip is like a computer virus. When you put a virus in a computer, it seeps into every aspect of it, and it can be so widespread, and it can be devastating, and it clogs the veins and the arteries of the computer system, and it just causes devastation on all other forms of communication that take place. It just warps everything that comes out, and that's what gossip does. And gossip is just your opinion. It's a great, I loved his look on gossip, because we see that happen so often. We see people get caught up in gossip, and it's so trashy, and it's so awful, and it's just, there's no place for it on the face of the earth, but yet we get caught up in it. But you look at, well, why do people get caught up in it if there's no place for it? And it's kind of interesting, because when he did his analysis of gossip is just somebody's opinion, nothing but your point of view. So you're expressing a point of view or your opinion to people, and you're energized to spread it because you're in this mode of, I need to be right. Do you get this? It's this fear of being wrong, so you need to be right. This agreement that you have that came out of fear. So now because you have this agreement with yourself, I have to be right, you go out there and you spread gossip about people because you have to show that you're right, your opinion is right. So you start arguing why you're right, they're wrong, or this is true. It's incredible how we see that that's the core base underlying need we have that we're fulfilling in the form of why we gossip. You know, the other thing is worthy. I'm not worthy, so if I make somebody else look less worthy than I am, then I'm going to improve my worthiness. Oh my gosh, how awful is all of that? So you can see how these agreements of fear that we carry really corrupt our word. So the important thing is to be impeccable with your word. And he looks at the word impeccable, and he just defines that. He goes, what does impeccable mean? Well, if the Latin base for impeccable means with, it comes from a word that means without sin. From a secular perspective, anything against self is sinful. So when you operate from impeccable, you take responsibility for your actions. Take responsibility for your actions. But you do not judge or blame yourself. So you get out of blame game, you get out of judgment mode, and you just say, hey, I'm going to take responsibility for my actions. Being impeccable with your word is the correct use of your energy. It means to use your energy in the direction of truth and love for yourself, because you need to love yourself before you're going to love somebody else. And then I got into the like attracts like. You know, if we get out there with insults, we're going to bring insults back to us. If selfishness will bring selfishness back to us. No love. If you don't love other people, you're not going to get love back. But if we convert all those and we show selflessness, is going to attract selflessness. Love will attract love. So it's about how we can be impeccable with our word, which is going to generate what we bring back in our universe. As you sow, so shall you reap. As you, whatever you put out in the universe is what's going to come back to you. So impeccability of our word by our level, and here I put a quote at the end of this section saying, you can measure the impeccability of your word by the level of self-love. How much you love yourself and how you feel about yourself are directly proportionate to the quality and integrity of your word. So take a real hard look at that, and where can we be different? How can I increase my impeccability? How can I be impeccable with my word? How can I change my verbiage and my communication skills to be impeccable with my word? And many of us have many things to do on that, you know. And I come up with a thing, kind of like, don't say anything. If you can't think of anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. I mean, we have all these things that we've learned as little kids in our life that really are really at the core of what this whole agreement is, being impeccable with our word. And affirmations is another way. How do we be impeccable with our word? Well, we keep being positive all the time, and positive affirmations are part of the process of helping us stay in a positive mode. It's always about being positive, what's out there for us, keeping that vision of positive and the vision of just, you know, strength and self-love and self-recognition, because it's easy. I mean, I know in Manatech, it's so easy because I coach people all the time, and I get these people get on my calls with me and they'll start getting negative. They get down about something. I can't make this, or I'm not going to make the next leadership level, or I'm not going to be able to do that. We get all this negativity, and it comes from not just inner self, but it comes from people around us. Somebody quits taking the product. Somebody tells you this business doesn't work. And you start grabbing onto this, and you go, whoa, wait a minute. Why am I absorbing this? If I can't say anything good, I don't say anything at all. I'm going to stick to my positive affirmations, because my word, not only my word that I communicate outward, but my word I communicate to self. In other words, my thoughts, they're so powerful. They're the source of my energy. They're the source of my power. They're the source of what happens in my life. As a man thinketh, you know, so is he. So why are we not putting more emphasis on the impeccable nature of the words that we use in through our mouth, the words that we communicate on paper, and the words that we communicate to ourselves through our own mental thought processes. Okay, so that's agreement number one. Huge agreement. Be impeccable with your word. Second agreement is, don't take anything personally. And this is very big. And you can see how this is born right out of the first agreement. If you're impeccable with your word, right? You're impeccable with your word. You say only the greatest things. You only come out in a powerful way. You stay positive. You don't say anything if it's not. Well, if you're not going to put out anything that's negative, if you're not putting out negative language to people, then you don't have to worry about somebody taking something personally, because you're not being negative about it. So, but you want to make sure that your word is impeccable, and you want to make sure that you're not taking things personally. Don't take it to heart. Don't take it as something that's meant about you. And I put the book there, What Other People Think of Us Is None of Our Business, by Terry Cole Whitaker. I love that book, and I share it with a lot of people. It happens to be written by a Unitarian minister, but, you know, if you're not, that's New Agey type stuff. If you're not into that, that's fine. If you can dig through that stuff, you know, from a Christian perspective, you can still get a tremendous amount out of that book. because it truly gets to the core of why are we letting what other people of us impact us and control us. Because the truth is, to one person, is just their opinion or their belief system, and it's based on their own feelings, their own opinions, their own beliefs, their own stuff. That's what's coming out of their mouth. And all of us have people out there that try to undercut us or say things. I mean, and it doesn't get any better. As you climb the corporate ladder, as you climb in Manitech, as you get to be presidential, you're going to hear other presidentials say things from time to time that are either out of jealousy or out of anger or out of some kind of... It's their stuff. It's not about you. It's their stuff. So don't let their stuff impact you. And the reason that, why do we take things personally? Well, number one, it's hard when somebody says something about us to just kind of blow it off. And I'm not suggesting that you just blow it off. I'm just saying you take it for what it is. It's there, out of their stuff is where it's coming from. But when somebody says something to you and you take it personally, what does it trigger? You get offended. And then out of your offense, you right away have this requirement, because you have this agreement with yourself about, oh my gosh, I have to defend myself. So you right away have to defend yourself. So you immediately get into a conflict with them, because now it becomes a battle. You want to defend yourself, so you get into this battle with this person. And do you find yourself doing that? If you see that a part of a pattern in your life, you got to say, wow. And you first have to look at what a bunch of wasted energy. If you don't get this point, you really miss the boat. Why are you wasting all that energy? When all it is somebody else's feeling or opinion or belief system. Why do you have to be, and you go back to, where does it stem from? You having to have to be right. You want to prove you're right. So you got to fight this battle and expend all this energy in a negative direction just to prove you're right. Well, if that's really their belief system and their feelings, good luck on proving yourself right. Now you get into this battle and conflict with somebody, on and on and on and on and on, and you know, forever and ever, and who knows where that's going to go. Usually the decibels rise to unlimited levels, and you get it fraught with all this nonsense, and there's no victor. It's like another lose-lose situation. So, and we tend to make one little thing, one little comment, we take personally, and boom, all of a sudden it explodes into some massive thing out of just your need to be right. So that was another one of those agreements that you made with yourself. So avoid that. Why waste all that energy? Why expend it all? You even listen to your own stuff. Some of us listen to our own stuff. You got that little voice in your head that's telling you all sorts of stuff, and you listen to that. And now you take it personally. It's funny. We have our little voice in our head. We take it personally, and then we start arguing with that. It's, again, don't take it personally. It's not about you. It's about programs, agreements, belief systems that you've planted in your body somehow out of your life that have no truth. They just happen to be programs that ended up in your life out of an event. You took a fact in your life and you gave it a meaning and you put it as an agreement in your body, and now all of a sudden you live with this agreement which has no basis in fact, no basis in truth. It just happens to be something that you've planted in your head. So again, don't take it personally, even those little voices in your head. So if you make it a habit, here's a quote out of this chapter. It says, if you make it a habit of not taking anything personal, you won't need to place your trust in what others do or say. You will only need to trust yourself to make responsible choices. It's a great comment. And this, don't read this wrong, people. This doesn't say don't trust other people. It just means you won't you won't be needy in placing trust in what others say or do. So it's not about what they say is bearing truth for you. It could be their truth or their belief, but it doesn't have anything to do with your personal situation. And it's a beautiful thing. So stay out of taking things personal. Okay? Great to do that. Third agreement is don't make assumptions. Now, we know what the word assume is. It makes a you-know-what out of you and me, and we've heard that over and over again. And it is absolutely true. It is absolutely true. We make assumptions, and the problem underlying assumptions is what? We believe that they're true. We make assumptions about something, we accept it as truth, and this triggers us to take it personal. Here we go back into the same drama. Are you getting the drama we're creating here? Then we go into blame and react to sending emotional poison in their direction. Then we get to defending ourselves and fighting, and the conflict starts, and we've recreated that same drama all over again. We've created a huge thing out of something very small. So again, don't make assumptions. And what drives us to make assumptions? I think this is important to understand, because if you understand what forces you or what causes you to make assumptions, now you can go after the cause. We somehow in our life believe that we have to understand things. We have to have a full understanding. We have to have answers for everything. And boy, I just went through, and I'll share this with you from a Christian perspective, I just went through a great Bible study around Job. And man, if you want to if you want to be coming from a position where you have to have answers for everything, you try to live the life of Job. I mean, there was a perfect example of there were no answers for Job. It wasn't, no matter what his friends told him, and Zophar and Bildad and these guys, I mean, it was incredible how much stuff that was poured on him in his life. Everything taken away, all his family, all his money, all everything. He was stripped to nothing. And if he had to have an answer, he was as good as dead. I mean, he would have come up with so many falsities. But, you know, there are many things in life we're just not going to understand. We're not going to have answers for. But when we have to have answers, when we put that pressure on ourselves that we have to have answers for everything, and so many of us do that. And the reason we do it is because somehow answers make us feel safe. It doesn't even matter if they're right, correct, or not. Somehow answers make, and that's what assumptions are. Assumptions are just, most of them, incorrect answers to something. And it's so ridiculous. Again, we made that agreement with ourselves that we have to have answers because we have an agreement that we have to keep safe because of fear of being unsafe. So fear triggers us to have these answers, which triggers us to have to make assumptions about things that we can't figure out because we somehow have to figure them out. It's crazy how this drives us. And what is your alternative to assumptions? The alternative is to ask questions. When something happens in your life and somebody says something and you assume they meant X, Y, Z, or you assume that the other person did A, B, C because of what this person said, get out of assumptions and just go, wow, how could I resolve this? How could I resolve it right now versus staying in assumption? Why do I have to have that answer? If I need the answer that badly, why don't I give the person a phone call and just ask them point blank? You know, I heard this story, or I heard this, or this is what you said. Could you explain to me what you meant by it? I mean, simple. Explain to me what you meant and find out the depth of what they were really saying instead of making assumptions. It's so much easier. Now you can say, well, but Mary Jo, what if they tell me that this is what they meant? Well, then you go to agreement number two. You don't take it personal. You get this? But at least you have an understanding. You're not assuming something that never was said, never was clarified, never was possibly ever true. You just decided you had to get some truth to it. So you made up and assumed something out of what happened, what event transpired, what word somebody used, what somebody else gossiped about, whatever. Unbelievable how we get caught in that whole morass. Stay away from assumptions. They'll never serve you. So go for truth. Go for what actually truly is going on. Ask questions. Better to ask questions than ever to make assumptions, because assumptions only set you up for more suffering. Okay, and then the fourth agreement that he comes out with is always do your best. And this truly is an agreement about the action of the first three. It's about taking action. And it's about supporting the first three agreements. Always do your best. First, you need to recognize that your best is never going to be the same from one moment to the next. Why is that true? Because you're in a different frame of mind. You have a different emotional state. You have a different moods. Let's talk about, you know, if you really want to take this on, you know, and we'll talk about how to do that. But, you know, if you take on these four agreements and you say, okay, I'm going to live my life. I'm going to really direct my life towards these four agreements. As you start committing to these four agreements and living and breathing them every day of your life, your best is going to change. Your best is going to get better, and it's going to get better and better. So don't weigh yourself against your best today compared to your best tomorrow, compared to your best 6 months from now, compared to your best a year from now, because your best will change. But if you always, always shoot for your best every time you take any action, if you're always trying to be the best at what you do, then you're going to have a phenomenal, fulfilled life, because just that whole concept of the reward involved in being the best is going to be great for you. And don't get into being the best comparing, like if you're a basketball player, don't say, I'm going to try to be my best. Doesn't mean you're going to be Michael Jordan. So many of us get into comparative mode about being somebody else's best. Well, you can't be somebody else's best. You can only be your best. But it's better than just being good. It's about being your best. And that's a standard that we should all apply to our life. We should be the best we can be in Manitech. We should be the best upline we could be. We should be the best downline we could be. We should be, you know, the best supporter we could be. We should be the best spouse we can be. We should be try to be the best parent we could be. We should be the best, you know, across the board, the best Christian we can be, the best Jew we can be, the best Muslim we can be. We could be whatever we choose to be. We need to choose to be the best at what we are doing. And a lot of us go after reward. We're so reward-centered. We always are trying to achieve something because of what the reward's going to be at the end of the tunnel. And reward-driven is not bad. It's motivational. But if you truly try to be the best you can be at whatever you do, the reward is the action itself. And if you get that, you have gotten more than I could ever give you in a phone call. I mean, this is a concept of if you try to do your best and you achieve your best at everything you put your effort forth, and that's your activity level is, I'm going to be the best at doing this, then the action itself is going to be an immense award. Not the end result, it's the action. It's about living fully with that action in life. And I put in here, just, and it came again out of his book, where he's talked about Forrest Gump. Isn't that wonderful? I love that. And he looked at Forrest Gump, and some of you have seen that movie, and I love the movie. It was probably one of my favorite movies, because I love statement movies, and clearly Forrest Gump, that movie makes a huge statement. And part of the statement of that movie is all about this man who really didn't have any great ideas. He just was a guy who, and he didn't have a great intellect, and he didn't have much to offer anybody anywhere, but he always had a positive attitude. And no matter what he chose to do, whether it was play ping pong, whether it was to go in the shrimping business, whatever it might be, what did he choose to do? He chose to be the best at whatever he chose to do. He took action. And so many of us get stuck in fear, so we don't take action. So you don't even have to worry about being your best, because you're not even being at all. You're just stuck. So it's about stepping up, being the best at what you choose to do. So whatever you choose to do, you don't need great ideas, you don't need great intellect, you just need to choose to be the best. And as you show, he took action, and he chose to be the best he could be at everything he did. He did nothing with any expectation of a reward in mind. It was always choosing to be the best he could be at whatever he did. And that drove him, and of course we look at the success in his life, was immense. And the success would have been immense no matter what dollars and cents it would have shown thrown off. It would have been just the joy of being the best at what you chose to do. And this one agreement about being the best, as Ruiz puts it, he says, if you really choose to be the best, then you can fail at some of these other. You can slip and slide about being impeccable with your word from time to time. You can have problems with making assumptions. You can even take things personal from time to time, as you're trying to build into these other agreements. But if you always choose to be the best, this will carry you forward against all the other agreements. No matter how you might fail at some of the other agreements, that one will always bring you forward. So there we go. So the four agreements. Now, so you can say to me, okay, Mary Jo, how do I do this? How do I incorporate these in my life? How do I do? I mean, because they're incredible agreements. I mean, I don't think anyone can argue with the substance of any of these agreements. Their foundation biblically, their foundation spiritually, in many, many different religions. These are just like core truths about life. So what I suggest you do is you take these four agreements and you just type them up in bold lettering and maybe put them above your computer or put them on your desk or put them on your refrigerator and commit to them. Just make a commitment. And sure, you're not going to stumble and you're going to trip and you're going to fall and you're going to see. But if you don't open your eyes to what's happening in your life today and you don't start being aware of where you're failing on some of these agreements, then how are you going to change and move forward to make a greater commitment to these agreements? And watch how that changes your life. And maybe that's the big number one thing you need to accomplish for 2006, is you need to make these four agreements the core of how you operate in 2006. And just isolate on those four agreements and see what happens and what changes in your life around those four agreements. Because I'm going to tell you, they pop up in every single day of your life. They will pop up in everything you do every day of your life. Okay, we're back on. Everybody on? Yeah, okay. Any comments? We got a few minutes left, 5 minutes left, so let's have some feedback from the floor. Any of these agreements strike you specifically of something that's maybe lacking in your life that you need to work on? Hi, Mary. Mm-hmm. Great. Great. Good job. Great, Mary. Yep. And if you, yep, go ahead. There you go. It's great, isn't it? Yeah. I know. Try to put sleep on the book, put it under your pillow, and maybe by osmosis they'll sink in or something. No, I get it. They are challenging. These are challenging concepts. You're not going to have a book like this, and you're not going to have me giving a talk on it if I didn't think they were challenging. These are tough things. Uh-huh. Great piece. Go ahead and say it again. It's a great one. It's a great verse. And it's where, and that's where peace. It's when you start talking about peace in this world, look at all the ways that we create havoc in our lives, don't we? And if you look at these four agreements, do you get how these four agreements can just totally help you create peace in your life too? Do you just get that? Impeccable with your word. Don't take it personal. Don't make assumptions. You know, do the best at everything you do. Look at the positive nature of what you start operating from in your life. Yeah. Amen. It's the hardest one for you? Yeah. Uh-huh. Got it. So how can you... let me give you some suggestions on helping with that, because it's something that I had to learn myself. But I think one of the greatest ways to not take something personally is to think before we speak, to really sit back when somebody says something. And we typically, when you said knee-jerk reaction, we love as ourselves to jump right in immediately and respond. We love to do that. It's about our defense mechanisms, our offensive mechanisms, all these mechanisms take over and take control. I find that if you really want to conquer that agreement, you stop. When somebody says something, you want to respond immediately. You bite down so hard you can't open the mouth, and you think about it first. Isn't that incredible? I'm telling you, that will help shift you. Uh-huh. You're okay with it. You're right. And you could release. You went from this point of, you know, all of a sudden your blood pressure went up 25 points, and you turn around, look at the other direction, and all of a sudden that blood pressure falls right back down again. Isn't that a beautiful thing? And think of what a fool you would have made of yourself if you would have reacted based on the blood pressure going up. Right? And that's what we need to avoid in our lives. Right? Perfect. Okay, anyone else? Uh-huh. Oof. So you're impeccable with your word when you verbally communicate, but when you listen to your own brain, which is your word in your thought process, which is just as crucial, if not more so, you're jumping all over yourself. Yeah. So you're not being true to yourself. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah. That's... So you really got the victim responsible part down. Oh.